This program was produced with the support of StoryHive, creativity connected by TELUS. For more information, please visit storyhive.com.
In the spirit of reconciliation, we acknowledge that we live, work, and play on the traditional territories of the Blackfoot Confederacy, the Tsuut'ina, the Stoney Nakoda Nations, the Métis Nation, and all people who make their homes in the Treaty 7 region of Southern Alberta. The following contains discussions of emotional and mental well-being that may be sensitive for some viewers. Viewer discretion is advised. When you think of an Indian wedding, what comes to mind? You're probably thinking of colorful clothing, fun celebrations, countless parties, and family gatherings with laughter and dancing.
ਮੁੰਡਿਆ ਗਾਜੀ ਰਹਿ ਜਾਂ ਗੁੱਸੇ ਤੇਰੀ ਮਾਂ ਖੜਕਾਉਣੀ ਆ ਮੁੰਡਿਆ ਰਾਜੀ ਰਹਿ ਜਾਂ ਗੁੱਸੇ ਤੇਰੀ ਮਾਂ ਖੜਕਾਉਣੀ ਆ ਮੁੰਡਿਆ ਰਾਜੀ ਰਹਿ ਜਾਂ ਗੁੱਸੇ ਤੇਰੀ ਮਾਂ
ਖੜਕਾਉਣੀ ਆ I'm Pammy and I've been working in the South Asian wedding industry for over 7 years. In this series, we're going to learn of struggles that are often masked in an effort to encourage open conversations around expectations and having the courage to carve the life you want. We're going to meet people who are willing to break some traditional molds. Let's meet the outlaws. In this episode, we're sitting down with Bean. Bean is the president and founder of Ryu Paralysis Recovery Center, and she'll be sharing her own story and journey of finding the confidence to be who she was meant to be. All right, guys, we have Bean Gill here. Bean and I have been, we've known each other for a year now, I feel like.
Like a year and a half.
Oh, wow. It doesn't feel like that long. So Bean is kind of, you've been in this space of like, you know, speaking and telling your story for how long have you been doing this?
Like public speaking and stuff officially. Like 7 years.
Oh, wow. I didn't think. Oh, okay. What we'll do is we'll start with kind of your, I'll let you introduce yourself, who you are and what your story is.
Cool. So yeah. Hi, my name is Bean Gill. Full name is Benveet. And I was born and raised here in Edmonton in the 80s, which was fun for me, but, you know, as a family, we face some racial discrimination and stuff being in Alberta, and kind of had a regular upbringing. Well, kind of. My dad was really religious and Sikhism. And so we grew up in a very strict religious household, and which was fine for a long time. And then we ended up rebelling quite hard. and by quite hard, I mean, we cut our hair when we weren't supposed to cut our hair and we ate meat when we weren't supposed to eat meat. And yeah. And then, you know, in our family, education was really important. And so we weren't allowed to work while we were in school. Our job was to just go to school. And so after high school, I took 2 years off because I didn't know what I was going to do. And I became a healthcare aide at that point. And then applied to X-ray at Nate and became an X-ray technologist, and actually lived in Calgary. I did my practicum in Calgary. So I worked in all the hospitals down there and hated the traffic. So I moved back. And then, yeah. So, you know, I was engaged to somebody who my first boyfriend when I was 22, I think. You know, like I said, that was my first boyfriend, so I had no experience with dating. I've been boy crazy since the day I was born, but never dated anybody and never had any experience. And I didn't know what my standards were. I didn't have any because I didn't know. I just thought, oh my God, he likes me, so that's great, right? This is the person I will marry. Yeah, and then like his parents knew my parents from like back in the day, right? And my dad was not happy about it. He didn't really like him, but whatever, went along with it anyways. And then we got engaged. It was the typical Indian engagement at a restaurant. Wasn't huge or anything, but, you know, we had that kind of ceremony. And then we were, you know, preparing for our wedding, right? The wedding was going to be the next year. So I had a really big life-changing moment in 2012. And I always say that I hope 2012 remains the worst year of my life. It was just a really terrible year for me. It started with that January. I turned 30, and that was, you know, fun and whatever. I was married at that point, and I had been married for just over four years. And it was a very unhappy marriage, and I was really, really unhappy, and I didn't know how to communicate. I didn't know how to express my feelings. And I remember saying to my friend in January of 2012 that this is the last year. I'm going to leave him this year. I don't know how much longer they expect me to put up with this stuff.
Mm-hmm. And who's they?
They is his family.
Okay. And were you living with his family?
Yes. So we lived in their basement with my in-laws living upstairs, and it wasn't that bad at all. Like, I honestly had it pretty good compared to a lot of other stories that I've heard. I did have it really good. The thing was, is that he had a few medical issues happen. And he's always had some mental health illnesses, but they had not been diagnosed. And, you know, I tried my best to help him and support him, took him to as many doctors and psychologists and whatever I could do to help him, but he didn't want the help. And so you can't help somebody unless they want the help, right? You know, but for myself, I wanted to make it work. I did not want to be divorced. I did not want my marriage to fail. I wanted it to work. I wanted that family. That's what I wanted, right? It just was with the wrong person. So then it was April 2012, and it was Easter long weekend, and we were like, my best friend was here from Vancouver, and, you know, I was doing makeup for a lot of fashion shows and photo shoots. And so we had our like fashion friends crew, and, you know, a couple of them were male models. And so we would all hang out together and stuff. And my cousins were there, his cousins were there, all of my friends were there. We had like a great time. It was at Joey's, right? We had a great time. We drank a lot. And when we were going home, we went to a club, danced and stuff like that. And then when we were going home, we got into a very big fight. And I don't remember even what the fight was about, but he backhanded me and hit me. And, you know, I was just like, what the hell? Like, right? You can't hit me. And one of my friends was in the back seat, and he was like, you can't hit her. And so my friend got out of the car, got in the cab, and went home. And then him and I fought all the way home. And when we got home, the fighting continued. And then that's where it got even more physical. And I called his brother. He didn't answer. Then I called his cousin. He didn't answer. Then I called my sister, Tin. And she called my mom, who was working nights. And my mom said that that was the happiest she's ever been. That was the best phone call she'd ever received, because she knew it was coming. Not that I was abused, but that I was done. And then I left, and I said a few choice words to his parents before I left. And when we left, like, I went with my dad and my siblings, and as we were leaving, the police called and said, like, you know, do you guys feel safe or whatever? We said yes. And they went to his house and they arrested him. Police have a zero tolerance policy for any kind of domestic violence. And so they charged him with assault. But what happened with me is, after that happened, all of my friends were like, you need to talk to a therapist. You need to go talk to somebody and like talk this through. And I was like, no, 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 like, I'm fine. I'm totally fine. I don't need to do that. I can't afford it. I could very well afford it. But instead, I was spending that money on alcohol or shopping, or I was numbing myself with whatever I could, because I didn't want to face the trauma that I was going through. Fast forward to June. So that happened in April. Now it's June 2012. And my dad says he's leaving our family. He's leaving. He's had enough. He doesn't like the way we live. He's, thinks we're all sinners, and he's going to go to Toronto, and he's going to be going around and doing bot at different people's houses and like praying and whatever, right? And like, we knew this was coming. It's been decades in the making, but when it actually happens, like, it's still quite devastating. And I was close to my dad, so like, you know, it hurts, right? So I didn't know how to process that abandonment either. And then 2 weeks later, I'm going to Vegas with my friends, and I really wanted to go. We're going for my friend's stagette, but I didn't want to go to the wedding because I was a bridesmaid and my ex was a groomsman at the same wedding. And so that Wednesday when we left, I left and I forgot to say bye to my mom. And because I just left right from outside. And when I got to the airport, my mom called me and she's like, hey, where are you? And I was like, at the airport. And she's like, you never said bye to me. I was like, oh my God, I forgot. Like, it was in such a rush. Little did I know I'd be seeing her sooner than later. So that Wednesday in Vegas was fun. We partied Wednesday night, shopped all day Thursday, partied Thursday night, woke up on Friday the 13th. And that was the day that we were going to go to the pool. But, you know, so I got up, I brushed my teeth, washed my face, walked over to the window, opened up the curtains and saw that it was raining outside. I remember thinking like, that's weird. When does it rain in Vegas in July? And then I walked back to the bed and that was the last time that I walked on my own. I remember the carpet on the bottom of my feet. I remember the four steps I took to get to the bed. I remember getting into the bed with my right leg first. And as I laid in bed, I had the most excruciating pain I've ever felt in my low back. And the pain lasted a couple of minutes and then I wasn't able to move my right leg. And so as I lay there trying to move both my legs, only my left leg is moving. So I'm wiggling my toes, flexing my ankle, bending my knee, whatever I can do. And then a couple minutes later, it went prickly from my hip to my toes and I was left paralyzed from the waist down within 10 minutes. That's bringing up emotions in me. Like every time I tell this story, I like cry at different points. I'm not sure why it's bringing up so much emotion in me right now, but, and I'm an x-ray tech, right? So my critical thinking skills jump into play. You know, I started my pulse and like looking, how is my breathing? What could possibly be happening in my spinal cord? Why am I not moving? I could feel everything, couldn't move anything. You know, what I found out, what did happen to me, it was a virus that attacked my spinal cord. And this particular virus called EBV, Epstein-Barr virus, has 60 different mutations. And they feed off of different heavy metals that are in your body. And stress is a major key player in this. And so I never knew how to manage my stress. And like I said, I didn't know how to communicate. So I would just stuff everything down inside or I would sweep it under a rug and then explode. And I ended up having a misdiagnosis because all of my diagnostic tests came back clear. There was nothing physically wrong with me. And so they gave me the diagnosis of conversion disorder. And that is where you're so stressed out that your brain tells your body to shut down. And it made sense to me, right? Given everything that I've been through and like 30 years of trauma all built up, it made sense. And so the stress of everything is kind of what I think pushed my body to that breaking point and allowed that virus to reach level 4, which is where it senses a high rise in cortisol, which is your stress hormone. And that's when it's like, now's my time, and it attacks your central nervous system. But yeah, stress had a major, major part to do with it. And so one of the biggest blessings that has come out of that misdiagnosis was that when I came back to Canada, I started seeing a psychologist and I still see her to this day. And she's given me so many tools and has helped me work through so much trauma. She helped me find my confidence because after being paralyzed, my first thought was, who the hell is going to date a girl in a wheelchair?
So how you said that, you know, one of your thought processes when everything happened with your diagnosis was that who's going to marry me now or who's going to date me now, right? And I find that that's a question I feel like that a lot of girls have because we're so conditioned at a young age to like your end goal in life is to get married and have kids. And I understand that, you know, for a lot of people, and even in different cultures, that that might be the case where, you know, women should get married and they should have kids and there's a timeline. But I feel like when in South Asian culture, or maybe that's just because we've lived it, that it's so, so, so heavenly, like heavily ingrained in us, like marriage and weddings, because our parents, you know, they work all their lives and their whole life goal is we have to get our kids married. We have to have a big wedding for our kids. We have to get our kids married. This person has to, you know, and their idea of success, being successful in life, is when their kids get married.
Yeah, that's a big marker, because that's all that they knew too, right? Their parents said the same thing to them of, now that you're married, you can do whatever you want. We were taught that all the time. My bad parents said that to me all the time. You can do whatever you want when you're married.
So your thought process goes into this, right? So kind of walk us through that a little bit.
Okay, well, I'm a very different person than I was 9 years ago. Very, very different, and in a good way. Then when I was paralyzed, like, you know, I was just, there were so many things going through my head, right? My muscles were melting away in my legs very, very fast. And I got a belly really quickly, because your ab muscles are now not working. And so your organs kind of flop out, right? And that messed with my self-image. I had no identity. My identity was taken from me. Before, I was a kickboxer. I was very healthy. I was always the physical laborer in our family. And I was an x-ray tech, right? Like, these were my things that were my identity. And now I'm paralyzed. And I don't like anything about who I am. I don't like my body. I remember laying in the hospital bed fighting with God. Why am I still here? Why did this happen to me? What did I do to deserve this while my ex is still walking around without a care in the world? Right? Like, those are the thoughts that were going through my head. And, gosh, bringing up emotion again, but like, that's what I was thinking. I didn't want to live. I didn't want to live like this. You know, there was a lot of things happening in my head that, like I said before, one of the greatest blessings was that I started seeing a psychologist, and she helped me work through all of this stuff. And she gave me a lot of the tools to move through it in a healthy manner without any vices. That's what I highly recommend to everybody. I think every person on this planet needs to see a therapist. And like, now I see the great value in it, right? And then, so like, how that kind of morphed and changed was, it wasn't until I met a girl who had broken her neck very, very high up. And she said to me, I'd be happy if I could move a finger. And it was that moment that I was like, okay, Bean, I had like a wake up call, right? Like, you're not allowed to feel sorry for yourself anymore. Your hands work, your arms work. You know, and at that point I was standing, but not walking. I wasn't independent at that time, but I knew I would be. And so I switched my mindset, and it honestly just happened in a flash of a second. After she said those words, I was just suddenly became grateful for everything I have instead of being sad about everything I lost. And when I switched my mindset, literally my whole world changed. That's when I found out about activity-based training, which is an awesome form of rehabilitation exercises that help you retrain your nervous system. And that's a whole nother story on its own. That goes into my business. But I was like, okay, then, you know, if this is going to be my life, I want to be as healthy as I possibly can. I want to regain as much function as I possibly can. I'm going to keep trying to do whatever I can until I see something that doesn't, or until it doesn't work, or whatever. I didn't even think of that really, but I was just like, hey, I'm just going to go. I'm going to do whatever I can. You know, like I said, when I found out about activity-based training, I went to Regina. There's a center there for a week with my mom. And then we went to California for 3 weeks. And that's where I really found my confidence. And that's because I was there with like so many other people who were living the same life, facing the same struggles, trying to reconnect their bodies to their brains, to their body as well. And they understood, right? I finally felt like I wasn't alone in this. And like, my family and friends, they really, really tried to help. They really did. A lot of them stepped up a lot, and I'm super, super grateful for that. But they don't understand, and they can't understand, because they are not in the same position. And so, you know, finding people who looked like me, who talked like me, who sat like me, it really helped me, you know, find that sense of community and just like, you know, kind of help me wrap my head around things a little bit. That's kind of how my confidence started building.
Do you feel like you're encouraged to share your story in the community, or do you feel like you were met with resistance?
No, I've definitely am encouraged to tell my story, and that encouragement comes mainly from my family and my mom. and them treating me like I'm normal, right? Which made me feel good. And the reception that I've got with other people in our community, I mean, everyone's usually really curious, right? Like, I get the looks. I get all of the looks. And some of the looks are genuine curiosity. Some are just straight up pity. And then some are disgust. I have learned, and I take each of those opportunities as an education opportunity, right? I had the stigma too before I became the person with a disability, and I didn't even realize it. And by me going out there and still doing things, like I went to the gym, and it was really, really hard as a person with a disability to go to a gym, right? Like, it's hard enough as an able-bodied person going to a gym and not feeling judged and whatever, right? Throw a wheelchair in there and it's like exponentially harder. But I put my full face of makeup on because that made me feel good. I got cute like workout clothes because that made me feel good too. And I did whatever I needed to do to make myself feel good to go there and work out.
What's one thing that you would say to everyone listening?
That you're going to get through it. Whatever it is you're going through, you will get through it. Life is meant to test us. Right? I think a lot of people think that life is meant to be fair and it's meant to be easy. It's not. This is a wake-up call to everybody who thinks that. It's not. Right? Life is full of hurdles. It's full of adversity. And it's how you face those adversities and how you react to them that builds your character. Right? We can all sit in our houses and like pretend like nothing's wrong, or, you know, live such a sheltered life that you don't ever face adversities, but they're going to come at you no matter what. And really understand yourself, know who you are. And this is a continual process, right? Like, we all go through identity crises through our whole lives. And like, after being paralyzed, I went through a big one. And, you know, I honestly didn't really understand who I was until it was 2014. 2 years after I was paralyzed, I was in Red Deer for a training for the Rick Hansen Ambassador Program. And I had a hotel because it was a two-day training program. And I was there by myself. First time I've ever been in a hotel by myself after being paralyzed. And, you know, I got a bottle of wine, and they had this full-length mirror there. And so what I decided to do was I took off all of my clothes and I sat in my wheelchair in front of this full-length mirror. And I looked at myself in the eyes. And I don't know how many people have actually done that, when you look in a mirror and look into your own eyes to see who you actually are. And I had a conversation with myself. I looked at my body and I pointed out every single thing that I hated about my body. Every single thing. And then I cried, like I was crying, bawling throughout this whole thing while I was doing it. And after I said everything that I hated about my body, I wiped my tears, took a few deep breaths, and then I looked in the mirror again. And I said, I love you. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. These are all the things that I love about you. These are all the things that people will love about you. And when I did that, that's when I kind of like all the things I hated started turning into things I loved about myself. And it started with my eyes and then my smile. And people had told me I have a cute nose. So then I said, I have a cute nose. And, you know, then I started kind of like, all of the things that I loved about myself. I love my hands. My hands are my independence. Whew, Pammy, these emotions, man.
It's okay, Pammy.
But up until then, like, I didn't know who I was. I was kind of a shell of a person, right? Like, I'm sure I had hobbies. I liked working out. I liked doing yoga. But I didn't really know who I was. I don't think a lot of us know who we are, right? And like, we are told who we should be. We're told, we're compared to our siblings and we're compared to our cousins, or, you know, this person looks this way, all of your sisters are skinny, why aren't you? And those are the things that shaped my identity in my head. And it's wrong. That's really, really wrong. And so until I sat there in front of a mirror, bawling my eyes out, telling myself I love myself, giving myself a really big hug, and telling myself that I'm going to be okay. I'm going to be okay. I'm going to. This happened to me for a reason. And there's a huge reason, right? Like, I'm meant for big things, right? And so that's when I was like, no, I need to start doing something. And so, you know, well, the reason I was in Red Deer was because I was training for public speaking, right? I was going to be an ambassador for the Rick Hansen Foundation, teaching kids about disability, teaching kids about inclusion and accessibility and perseverance and kindness. I was like, okay, like, this is what I'm meant to do. I am meant to educate people and to change people's minds. In 2016, 2017, there was a period where I didn't have a vehicle. So I was taking Uber. You know, I would be going to work or whatever, and I'd have my wheelchair, I'd have my walker with me, I'd have a bag with me. And I never in my anywhere in my Uber profile did it say that I'm a wheelchair user. And I never requested a wheelchair accessible vehicle because I can take my wheelchair apart and put it in a car by myself. The first time the driver would see me, I'd get a few different reactions. The main reaction I'd get, the look on their face that said, oh God. So whatever, you know, fake it till you make it, put a big smile on my face, go down to their car, like, oh, can you put this in the trunk? And like, I can take my chair apart. You just have to put it in the trunk for me. And I'd always sit in the front seat because that was easiest for me to transfer in and out of. And it was about a half an hour drive to my work. And I would take that opportunity to educate. Some drivers asked me what happened. A lot of them would just sit there straight looking forward, like not even like just pretending I wasn't there. And I'm like, bro, like I'm sitting right next to you. Yeah. Right. I would just start saying like, you know, oh, I don't even remember how I would bring it up. But I would just say like, you know, I was paralyzed by a virus. I was in Vegas when it happened and a virus attacked my spinal cord. And, you know, then that would open the conversation. And then they would, you know, just ask me like, you know, what happened. I'd go into my story and tell them, and they'd be like, well, where are we going right now? And I'm like, to my work. Oh, you work? And I'm like, yeah, big surprise. People with disabilities actually work. Yeah, man. Right. Like we are actually contributing members of society, which is a thought that many people don't have because it's never seen. Right. And the limiting beliefs put on people that, oh, you're never going to amount to anything. Like, what could you do? You couldn't do that anymore. So I always took that opportunity to educate. And by the time we would get to my work, the common response that I would get would be, thank you so much. You have changed my outlook on people with disabilities.
I feel like your story in many different ways, like hits home with people, you know, like not being able to process your trauma, going through the stress of your divorce and your dad leaving and all these kind of things. Like these are all things that are so common, you know, amongst everyone, but like specifically amongst like the South Asian community. And I really hope that people listen to this and can kind of take something from it. And to see someone like you come out of that and to be where you are now, you own Ryu Paralysis Recovery Center, you have your own business, you work, you're public speaking now. Like, I don't want people to ever feel like they're stuck in a situation where they have to accept their circumstances.
You can always achieve more. I just go from like what my experiences and my struggles, and the reason I share them is because I hope that it helps somebody else that's going through the same thing or maybe going through their own adversity. And, you know, every time I share my story, it does take a little bit of that burden off of me. And it does make me feel better. So
I definitely think talking about our struggles, being able to just talk and share our stories is what is going to ultimately, you know, help somebody else, but ultimately help ourselves.
Of course. And that's something that we have to fight with our family upbringing about, right? Like, Loki Genge, it's a cardigal, it stays here. But it's like, well, if we don't talk about it, then how are we going to normalize it?
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Bean. And the floor is yours.
So you can find me on Instagram at Branzoid, B-R-A-N-Z-O-I-D. That is my personal Instagram. or my business one, which is at REYUPRC. My business is REYU.ca, so REYU.ca. So if you have a disability or someone you know, let me know. We run awesome programs. I'm down to just talk to anybody about anything. And my last message is just, you know, be kind. And if this podcast, if this My Story inspired you, I implore you to ask yourself, what did this inspire you to do? What are you going to do with this inspiration to make a change in your life, in the life of your family, in the life of your circle? So what kind of ripple effect can you create with the inspiration that you've received today?
Special thanks to the National Screen Institute and our NSI program manager, Jessica Gibson, and our mentor, Matt Waterworth.
This program was produced with the support of TELUS.